Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 9.5th annual Fall Spectacular. See, here's the problem. We were not keeping records 10 years ago. And this is either the 9th annual Fall Spectacular or the 10th annual, and I don't know which, so we just averaged them.
It
which
could
is
be the 11th.
No, I know that. That is not so. It is mathematically correct, but it's a little awkward in terms of pronunciation.
Awkward.
Listen, thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and here with me to explain to you how to access Health Matters on the internet from the University of Kentucky, their telecommunications guru, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, it's really nice to see you smile, you know? That's funny. It just takes so little effort to make one Tony Weaver smile.
You bet.
You know, you want to smile? Go to WMKY.org. That's right, WMKY.org. That is the Moorhead State Public Radio website. You have to go through a few menus. There's some, you know, look at the shows, and in there you're going to find Health Matters. Navigate on over to that site, and then there you'll see a list of all the, you know, the more recent shows. You'll see a summary. You'll see a link to the audio. You'll see a link to the iTunes podcast. If you know what that is, you know what to do. But again, all the audio is right there. After you're done, jump on over to the Moorhead State Public Radio site and look at some of those other good shows. We encourage you. Things like Front Page, who we're quite fond of. Isn't that right, Tony? Aren't we?
You bet. Favorite radio show, hands down.
Yeah. Award-winning Front Page. So anyway, they're there, WMKY.org. After that, jump over on Facebook. You can either do a search for HM Radio Show, or you can just put a / HM Radio Show on the end of that Facebook.com URL, and that'll get you straight to our fan page. And there you can interact with the show. You can leave us some comments, leave us some feedback. Tell us what you like, what you didn't like. Tell us what's in the news we should be looking at. The odds are we're probably looking at it, but I don't know. Sometimes we get a little busy and we don't post it. Sometimes we do post it. You know, the beauty of going out there is you just never know what we've done out there. And then, of course, if you're a regular Facebook user, we would love for you to like us and follow us. And occasionally we'll fill your inbox with necessary clutter. That's what we do at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for our fall spectacular, as always, Shoes with Tread. Staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk. That's right, Shoes with Tread, the way to avoid that nursing home problem. You know, Rick, we have for many years advocated Shoes with Tread.
For 9.5 times.
They have been a regular. We've approached this from pretty much every angle you can possibly think of. This week, I wanted to talk some about Shoes with Tread, just reminding you that falls are especially a big problem among senior citizens. And research indicates that over a third of women and over a quarter of men in their shoe choices, people over age 65 around the house, will either go barefoot or in their sock feet. Wear sock feet increases your risk of falling by about 2 times. That is, it about doubles your risk of falling, whereas high heels actually increases your risk by about 11 times of falling down. These are slips, these are trips, these are stumbles, but also, of course, with high heels, you can collapse off to the side. So it is important that yourself or the senior citizens, you know, get Shoes with Tread, some shoes that have a low heel. Here's the key characteristics, Rick, of these shoes. A low heel, higher than 2.5 centimeters, again, will increase your risk of falling over 11 times. Secondly, it's got to have a stiff heel so that it gives you some support. I am particularly fond of the hiking boots, the high-top shoes that support the ankle because it does not allow the ankle to wobble and prevents falls. The other thing might be kind of surprising. Certainly, treaded shoes provide better traction. A beveled heel is a good idea, but hard-sole shoes are actually a better idea than the really soft, foamy, cushy shoes. Yeah, because you can't quite figure out if you've ever really paid attention. If you get on one of those really soft running shoes or walking shoes, your foot tends to wobble a little bit. You cannot feel the ground as well through that soft sole.
So stands to reason that you would like the old clippity-clop shoes, right?
I mean, yeah.
The hard-sole shoes, they make the clippity-clop walking down the hall.
The hard-sole shoes are good. Now, the problem is many of them are slick, and that's why we emphasize Shoes with Tread. So you get those, basically, those, you remember those steel-toed safety shoes that you hand out at work? Those turn out to be a very good idea. They've got reasonably hard soles, they've got tread, they've got low heels, and they've got a strong heel support in the back. That heel box, you can't collapse it by pressing in from the side, has all the elements you need for a good shoe.
Did you just say that basically the best thing to do for everybody in the world at all times is just to wear hiking boots around the house?
Well,
is that what you just said?
But you know, that leisure approach where you go barefoot, you don't put on shoes until noon, you may be going around in flip-flops, house shoes, those type of things. That is a bad habit and can increase your risk of falling.
Well, you know, actually, Tony, I'm going to confess, you're right. I admit you're right. Last weekend, I like Crocs. You ever
yeah.
see Crocs?
Yeah.
I love the Crocs. They're just so comfortable.
They have tread.
They do, but they're plastic. I mean, for all practical purposes, they're like a plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out. I was trying to go between my detached garage and my home. And I've got it's a rock walkway made out of like this creek rock in the area here. And my wife has I think it's called a Rose of Sharon bush.
Right.
And it drops these buds after it's bloomed. And those buds, let me tell you what.
They are slick.
They are worse than any banana peel that you can actually get. So anyway, here, you know where I'm going with this. It was a little bit of rain. I was trying to hurry between the house and the garage. And all of a sudden, I realized my toes were at eye level.
That's right. Either this was an incredible dance step, or Rick, in fact, has descended to the ground.
And let's just say, I have figured out, your feet never come down as fast as they fly up.
You know, and Rick, I will tell you, Rose of Sharon, this is I guess that's a type of hibiscus. I'm not sure.
It is. It's a hibiscus,
yeah. But those big floppy blooms, when there is rain or when there is dew, these things are incredibly slick.
Right.
Two surfaces. First of all, you need to get that away from a walkway. I'll tell you,
yeah,
this thing will do it over and over.
Lesson learned. I ended up, I had turned, 90 degrees. Half of my body's in the yard, half of my body's on the rock walkway, and I'm sure it must have been hilarious on the security camera.
So two things. One is, when it is wet, pressure-treated pine wood is very, very slick. And secondly, a Rose of Sharon is not an appropriate liner for a walkway. You need to admire these things from a distance because they are incredibly slick. We have one on the concrete steps that came out of the back of our house when I was young, and
wow.
I learned firsthand on many occasions just exactly how bad these Rose of Sharon bushes are. So there's a couple pieces of advice, but remember our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. You've talked the talk, now walk the walk. Stay out of the nursing home. And you know, a couple of shows ago, I mentioned to you that I had been talking with my mother, and my mother said she didn't want to wind up in a nursing home. And we even had a survey that indicated, I forgot the numbers, 3/4 of adults fear chronic illness more than death, fear winding up in a nursing home. And you made the comment, Rick, we didn't really need to spend time surveying elderly adults. Anyone would know that no one wants to wind up in a nursing home. So one of the chief ways that people wind up in a nursing home is actually falls. So we're going to spend this show talking about falls. And I challenged my mother. I said, look, if you really don't want to wind up in a nursing home, change your ways. Cut down the Rose of Sharon, get the right shoes, exercise more, do those type of things. And we'll talk the whole show. We're going to talk about how to avoid falls. We'll have some side trips and detours along the way, but we will wind up explaining to you some of the chief risk factors for falls. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. And now we're on to the first article. Now, this is about back pain, but I think the therapy, the possibilities this therapy opens up it really makes you rethink how we're going to be doing rehabilitation. The title of the paper was The Effect of Horse Simulator Riding on Visual Analog Scale Body Composition and Trunk Strength in People with Chronic Low Back Pain. It came out of Korea. So these are Korean individuals with chronic back pain. And apparently Koreans have a lot of problems with back pain because they found 47 men with chronic low back pain, the average age was 20 and a half.
Wow. That's extremely low for chronic back pain.
Right. I don't know what's going on in Korea. Any of our Korean listeners.
I mean, do you think they just start working at such an early age? Do they have the same labor standards that we have to adhere to? I mean, because, in America, really, you don't really legally start working until you're 16. Although a lot of kids work on farms, a lot of kids
sure.
do have some. There are some metered jobs that you can get that, allow you to work minimal hours. And, but in the end, a person who, has a hard labor job in America really doesn't start doing that until 16.
I don't know. One thing I do know, and from the photos that are in the article, and from my knowledge of Korea, the obesity rates are much lower than here. So this chronic back pain was not due to a bunch of morbidly obese Koreans. I think, in fact, they had their body weight in kilogram. Their average was around 65 kilograms, which would run you up around 130 and change pounds. So these were not overweight people, but they had chronic back pain at age less than age 21. Now, they divided them into two groups then. They had 47 men, 23 in the control group, 24 in the horse simulator Riding Group. This was an 8-week program where they rode a horse simulator. They started off the first week. They had ordinary walking and then trotting for 5 minutes each, so a total of a 10-minute workout. They got up to an hour workout a day by 6 to 8 weeks, and they spent a total of 690 hours on the horse, on the simulated horse. There's a picture there of these guys on the simulator. These look exactly like merry-go-round horses.
Nice.
They're in front of a TV screen that's showing a southwestern desert scene.
And they're just riding along.
Yeah, you know those Korean deserts.
How many quarters did it take?
Well, and apparently these horses can rock back and forth. They can simulate the motion of a horse that is walking, trotting, cantering, and galloping.
Nice.
And they went from walking and trotting all the way up to a full gallop by the end. So these horses were galloping back and forth. These guys were riding on the horse. And this was a horse riding game, and they just adapted it for these people with chronic low back pain. The interesting thing is, by the end of the 8 weeks, they could twist their bodies. If they turned their bodies at 90 degrees, they could twist more. They had a larger muscle mass than the control group that just had ordinary activities, lower body weights, lower body fat, that is, than the control group, and lower, they had a 100-point scale point to where the pain is when you sit, when you walk, when you bend over, when you lift, and all those scales averaged lower, less pain for the people who rode these simulated horses.
Amazing.
I think it is. Now, the reason I mention this for a fall show is that this gives you an idea of what we could do. I think just about any human activity between the Wii and between some of these peripherals, you can simulate any human activity now with a video game.
Yeah.
Football, tennis. I mean, Rick, you've played on the Wii. You know what the options are.
I played rounds of golf.
And I think the neat thing about it that they mention is, look, if you were trying to ride a horse, there would be the potential for injury. There would be, obviously, the care. You'd have to drive to some place where they had horses. You'd have to take the time out to ride. Then you'd have to shower afterwards because the horse is sweaty and you're sweaty and so forth. And this happened all in the comfort of an air-conditioned room watching a TV screen of a desert.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about that, though, Tony. You know, a horseback ride isn't necessarily about, I mean, I don't know. There's something about the majestic nature of the horse.
Gotcha.
There's something about being up in usually around the woods or the field or something. There's a whole lot more to that. But, you know, hey, if you say I need to ride the mechanical one at Walmart, then here we go.
Well, here's
the
thing.
It's about time to do that anyway.
Right. And you think about exercise, though. Exercise, you can get on a treadmill and just walk mindlessly, or you could ride a horse through the desert. And in that case, it certainly comes out ahead of that. I agree with you. There's something about a real horse that's different. But
is it a horse with no name?
No, this is a horse of a different body composition, mainly plastic. But it is time to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about falls in our Fall Spectacular. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 9.5th annual Fall Spectacular, our salute to avoiding autumnal injuries.
Well, yeah. More than just that. Autumnal.
Autumnal injuries.
Is that really a thing?
There's an autumnal equinox. There's a vernal equinox in the spring, an autumnal equinox in the fall.
So are we going to do a 21st. Vernal injury show?
No. But here's the thing that I thought about. You know,
You
spring into spring, but
right.
You don't fall into fall.
Well,
that's just a bad idea.
That's why we're doing the show, because we don't want you to fall into fall.
Yeah, and you have winter weather, and you have the summer sun, and there's all this alliteration. And so, you know, there ought to be some kind of an autumnal automaticity or something like that. Something to, you know, that signifies autumn or fall. If you want to do a fall, you have a fall festival, I guess.
Well, there's plenty of those probably getting ready to start.
That's true.
What's your favorite one?
Here in Kentucky, the one that that has had durability, the one that I like is the Sorghum Festival.
You like, well, but you know, that's pretty good stuff. I mean, that's
sorghum is basically sugar in a jar.
Yeah, right. It's like it's not even liquid sugar. It's like it's syrup with sugar mixed in.
This is in West Liberty. There are many. I have been to the Hillbilly Festival once in Pikeville. Hopefully, we'll never go back. I happened to be speaking to some students there and happened to get there on the wrong day. That is a scary festival. Court days in Mount Sterling also a little bit worrisome. A lot of by that I mean they're just basically people going around with guns, and it's a really interesting collection of people there. You're never quite sure that you're on planet Earth, I guess would be one way to put it. So there's an apple festival. I think that's coming up. Browning Orchard has that. There are all sorts of festivals around Eastern Kentucky, but I'd have to say in terms of the history, the tradition, and also the fact that it celebrates something that's not terribly injurious, but now very quaint. Sorghum Festival in West Liberty, got to be my favorite. Back to our sponsor, Shoes with Tread, for the second time, reminding you, staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk, and I am speaking specifically to my mother. It is time to get Shoes with Tread. Just a reminder, high-heeled shoes, bad idea. Increase your risk of falling 11 times. Sock feet, bad idea. Increase your risk of falling twice. Walking down a walk with rows of Sharon or hibiscus blooms littering the walk, bad idea. Easy to become horizontal in that situation. The type of shoes we're looking for, one, they need to have a very solid heel box. And a beveled heel turns out to be nice because, again, that sharp edge heel can cause a slip when you step forward. Two, it turns out, for people who have some balance problems anyway, the cushioned soles, the walking shoes that so famously are so with those cushioned soles, allow you to wobble too much. A hard sole shoe is better. Tread is better than a leather sole that is slick and, again, as much ankle support as you can get. I am particularly fond of a high ankle shoe that gives you some support around the ankle and reduces wobble. That is our sponsor, Shoes with Tread, a very good way of avoiding falls. Now, we talked about horse simulators, but now let's talk about falling. And it's been a couple of years now. Came from the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. That's out of the CDC in Atlanta. Almost 87,000 Americans wind up in emergency rooms every year with falls related to domestic pets. These are cat and dog related falls, but not really. 8 million fall related injuries back in 2006. I will tell you, 90% of these are dogs.
Okay.
Yeah, you might stumble over the cat because you didn't see the cat, but the thing that's going to make you fall, dogs.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the cats, man, I don't know. Sometimes they walk at your feet, but they don't usually, like, my size, with my physical size, it takes a pretty good dog to really cause me to fall. I mean, now, I may kind of jump back if I step on their paw or something. You know, you don't want to do that because it's, you know, they start yelping or something, you know, and you're like, you feel bad. So you like move quicker than you probably are meant to move, and that could result in a fall. But I think, you know, for the most part, it takes a pretty big dog, don't you think?
Well, I will tell you, we had a semi-emergency situation back about a year ago at our house. I was going to run down the driveway. My dog got very excited and stepped in front of me, and as soon as I started running, the first thing I did was trip over the dog. Not a very large-sized dog, but I tripped and got a pretty good fall out of that.
Was that payback? Was it the same one that payback for dropping the tree on?
No, this was one Rick is referring to. My oldest dog, when it was young, I was cutting down a tree. The dog came over to see what I was doing, and the tree fell on the dog, and I felt bad about that dog. I don't think that dog and I have gotten along since then because he doesn't trust me, and I feel bad about it.
And I wonder why.
Yeah, but in this case, it was actually another dog, and this dog got excited and ran out in front of me as I was about to run, and I tripped over him. But here's the findings from the CDC. Females twice as likely as males to be injured. Most injuries around the house. 62% of dog injuries around the house, and 86% of cat injuries around the house. That is, you are not likely to be hurt by your neighbors or your friends or someone else's cat. Injuries most frequent among children up to age 14 and then adults ages 35 to 54, interestingly enough. Senior citizens have a problem. They're more likely to have a severe injury, but the actual number of injuries more common 35 to 54. Fractures, one-third of the time. Bruises or abrasions, 26%. Individuals 75 and older had the highest rates of fractures. And they recommended some prevention strategies. First of all, obedience training for dogs. You know our rule at Health Matters. If you or someone you love is over age 65 and going to get a dog, and we'll have some more information on this later in the show, that dog should undergo obedience training, not from them, because old people are notoriously bad. And listen to me saying old people. I am ageist here. I am blatantly bigoted. But I have not seen a senior citizen with a dog that I thought was well-trained. I'll just say that. There it is.
Okay. They're not easy to train, man.
Well, you've got to spend time with them.
It requires commitment.
That's right. You've got to spend time with them, and you've got to be tough on them and make them mind. And that is difficult. As you get older, the dog becomes your companion, that becomes your partner, becomes, in essence, your spouse, but not so much something that is trained to be obedient. 87,000 fall-related injuries every year. This is about 4 years ago now, according to the CDC, from pets and particularly from dogs. Next up, talk about drug-related falls. And here's some statistics. A third of people age 65 fall at least once every year. Now, that doesn't sound like much. You think, well, of course, people fall down all the time.
Yeah, but...
But at age 65, those falls get pretty serious.
Well, I was going to say, you start getting past age 65, a fall can be fatal.
Right.
I mean, that may be a bit of an exaggeration, but I think hip injuries can result in complications, which can result in actual fatalities. And so, you know, falls at an elderly age are to be taken very, very serious.
Again, as Rick said, a third of people over age 65 fall each year. About 15%, that's of the ones that fall, half of them fall at least twice. Fall in people residing in nursing homes, about 50% of them, and it triples between ages 70 to 75 and those aged greater than 80 years. So again, as you get older, falls become much more common. We're talking about 2 million emergency room visits, women more than men, 500,000 hospitalizations, almost 20,000 people die of complications of falling. Annual health care costs $28 billion, according to this particular article, April 2013. Most common injuries, fractures, 2/3 of the time. Head injuries, about 9% of the time. Mostly hip fractures, 27.5%. Wrists at around 20%, and upper arm, 7%. And about 1/3 of people presenting to the emergency room, they require hospitalization. So Rick's absolutely right. This is big deals. This is not funniest home video, isn't that ridiculous?
No, no. Mine at my age is America's funniest home videos. But I got 20-year window where if I can stay alive, then that same fall could be very bad.
Here are your risk factors. One is age. Again, as you get older, your balance and your ability to prevent a fall declines. Female gender, falling previously, that's bad. Fear of falling, turns out, if you fear falling, you are right. That is a risk factor for falling. Any mobility impairment, arthritis, joint disorders, Parkinson's disease, more about that later, vision and hearing problems, depression, turns out to be a pretty big risk factor for a fall. Stroke, obviously, heart disease, drug use, and that's prescription drugs, as well as over-the-counter recreational drugs, dizziness, and a chronic disease. And chronic pain turns out to be a little bit of a risk factor as well. Within the drug use, within prescription drugs, just wanted to mention, blood pressure medicines raise your risk of falling 24% of the time, because low blood pressure when you first stand up is a very common finding in seniors that fall. Fluid medicines, not so much, only 7% increase. Sleeping medicines, 47% increase. Antipsychotic medicines and seizure medicines, 60%. Antidepressants, 68%. And this turns out the old antidepressants that made you sleepy, they have a higher risk of falling, but also the new stuff, the medicine like Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, and some of those newer medicines that's not supposed to make you sleepy, still is linked to, maybe not cause, but is at least linked to, a higher risk of falls. Benzodiazepines, this is Valium, Librium, Xanax, and such as that, 60% increase. Narcotics actually reduce your risk of falling.
Wow.
Because basically when you take narcotics, you don't get up in the first place. And that's an important factor. The more you get up, the more you fall. And so if you don't get up, you don't fall. It's not a good life. And that's why arthritis medicines, things like ibuprofen and Aleve, increase your risk of falling by around 21%, because they may enable you to get up. So that's drugs. What about arthritis? If I said things that keep you pinned to a chair lower your risk of falling, you would expect arthritis then to lower your risk of falling.
You would think. Boy, am I wrong.
Well, give me a chance to prove you're wrong, Rick. Don't just assume you're wrong. That takes all the fun out of it. This was from Age and Aging, a medical journal, May 2013. And they talked about 27 million adults in the U.S. have clinical osteoarthritis, most commonly the knee joint. And about 12% of Americans over age 60 years have some symptoms plus x-ray changes of their knee. Knee pain present in around 1/3 of men and women age 65 years and above. So they looked at people with osteoarthritis, that's just the wear and tear, common arthritis. They looked at research papers, and they found women with hip pain were 3 times more likely to report a fall in the past 2 months, but there was no increased likelihood of falls in men with hip pain. Don't know why, but there it is. Older women with evidence of osteoarthritis of the hip, on x-rays had a reduction, a 30 to 40% reduction in the risk of having falls within 12 months. So, Rick, you are absolutely right in your assumptions. If you have significant and severe arthritis, you have a lower rate of falling. So arthritis medicines will increase your rate of falling slightly, and also getting a new replacement joint turns out to increase your risk of falling because you are now able to get up where you weren't before. Now, what do you do about it? Well, you exercise and you try to improve your balance. As a matter of fact, there was a review of physical therapy and for balance, and this was in Age and Aging, actually August 2014, last month. They did a search and they found that Tai Chi actually changes your balance better than any other exercise they looked at. Aerobic exercises, less than Tai Chi, and strength training actually was only about half as good at Tai Chi as far as avoiding a fall. Tai Chi, again, a balance exercise, which is really important. It turns out that strength training and also those water aerobics do not help your balance.
Really?
Yeah, because you think about it, when you're in the water, what if you fall? It's, I just fell.
You're going to swallow some water.
Well, no, you just make a splash is all.
What if you can't hold your breath?
Well, you don't go under.
Okay. I mean, you can do water aerobics in like 3 foot of water.
Yeah, you could, conceivably, if you were a total klutz, you could go underwater. But I'm betting that the people who do water aerobics, even when they lose their balance, they just fall over, make a splash, and they may get their hair wet.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I think less likely. So there's nothing like the Rose of Sharon trick that you pulled.
It wasn't a trick. I couldn't replicate it. It was a magic in the sense that I didn't get hurt. I mean, I was sore for about 4 days, but no, nothing broke.
Okay. But interestingly enough, then, if you exercise in the water or if you sit and do strength training and increase your muscles, this is a good thing. I'm not saying that water aerobics are bad. I'm not saying that strength training is bad. As a matter of fact,
it doesn't really help your balance.
And kind of surprising because strength training we had always thought would, but it turns out to be much less helpful than either Tai Chi or even aerobic exercises where you're actually up and moving around. The best thing you can do for your balance is actually to move around and practice. And Tai Chi is very nice because it forces you to focus on your balance. You will like this one.
I am ready for something like this.
This was, I got this out of, it was a summary, but it was reported in USA Today, August 28th. These are researchers at the University of Illinois, and they've got, a $1 million 5-year grant. Now you think, well, that's pretty good, $1 million. But if you think about putting together a lab, paying for assistance and so forth, that's not much. But here's what they do. They take senior citizens and they trip them.
What?
Yes, $1 million for, and I'm thinking,
how do they trip them on purpose?
Yeah, they trip them on purpose.
And these people sign up for that?
Yes, it's great. I actually posted a video on our Facebook page where our radio fans can go watch them trip senior citizens. And they put the senior citizens in a harness so they are not going to fall down. So it's got the whole water aerobics thing. But what they do is they just keep tripping them. And they don't tell them anything. They don't say, you should lean forward more or you should be prepared. They have them walking on a treadmill and they'll just slide the treadmill. They've got a way to slide the treadmill so that it's like they slipped. And the senior citizens then will have to adjust to it. They will change their walking. And apparently, if you practice falling down enough, then you get better. They have sensors so they can track how the falls are. So you see this woman who's in sort of a jumpsuit. She's got tags all over it that help them analyze her motions. And then she's on a treadmill. And then they just slide the treadmill so that, the tread itself slides. And I'm looking. I don't see anybody pushing a button. But apparently every so often it just slides and she stumbles.
Oh, my goodness.
Clive Pye, who is, sure, I mispronounced that name, is the chief researcher, and he says this is like a vaccine against falls. They call seniors to trip 24 times in one session, and the seniors learn to catch themselves and reduce their risk of falling by 50% outside the lab, and it apparently lasts even up to 1 year after after a session.
Oh, my goodness.
He's hoping to enroll 300 participants in the next 5 years. Hopes that these slip treadmills can go to doctor's offices and people can fall down all over the country. Could be incorporated as a standard in clinical care. I think that's a bit much, but I like the idea. I mean, if you're going to prevent this, why not do it in a safe setting, right?
This is
like a driving simulator. Yes, they're going to crash and you're going to throw stop signs at them and have them text and see how bad that is, but you do this within a safe setting. So if you put them in a harness and you start tripping them, they will learn what they need to know. And I can talk to them. I can talk about shoes with tread. I can talk about medication safety, about training your pets and so forth. But the bottom line is the best thing to do, apparently, is to actually have people slip and trip and almost fall down and catch themselves is a great way to train balance.
I think life just teaches balance.
You know, I got to say, if you're physically active, you're absolutely right. The more you nearly fall down, the more you learn about not falling down.
Right.
The problem is to reach that threshold. If you fall down, then obviously you've blown.
No, that's called experience.
Yeah.
But you experienced it falling.
But I don't think you learn anything when you fall down.
Oh, yeah, you do.
You shouldn't do whatever it was.
Yeah, you learn that the you should try harder not to fall down.
Yeah, yeah. That's what my dad always said. I'll try harder next time. And I said, Dad, you can't try harder.
Well, sure you can.
No, you cannot.
You can fall harder.
you can fall harder. But I'm just saying, you know, at this point in your life, you can't be more careful. You simply can't be more. It's not like you can just systematically be more careful.
Believe me, the problem is what happens is for the next 6 months, every time I walk past that Rose of Sharon tree, I'm going to think about the pain that was in my hip when I fell, and I'm going to be very careful. But at some point, that memory is going to fade, and then I'm going to be back to my old habits.
Right, and so you got to cut down the bush.
And, oh, it's gone. You'll be over this weekend, right?
That's the thing. When you see this sort of thing, just fix it right then. I mean,
I grabbed a hold of it, but it didn't hold me up. If anybody knows, these are bushes. They're not trees.
Right.
And it didn't. It would not hold up my size.
So it just,
anyway.
It lets you down, literally.
Literally.
One
would put me down and let me down.
And then it would not, you could not support yourself on it. Until we all fall. Here's some tips to avoid falls. Exercise to improve your muscle strength. Review all your medications with your doctor. Get annual eye exams. Use strong lighting at home. Install handrails. Limit your alcohol intake and stand up slowly because your blood pressure can drop when you stand. Now it's time to stand up slowly and get yourself a refreshing drink. We're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 9.5th annual Fall Spectacular as we celebrate the autumnal equinox with a show on equilibrium and maintaining upright posture.
Why couldn't it be the 9.10th?
Well,
that way you kind of go
average,
9/10. We don't know.
But that wouldn't be a 9.10th. That could be a 9/10.
Well, 9.5 says it absolutely is.
Well, mathematically, that's what this show is. It's the average of either the 9th or the 10th. We don't know which. And when you got that level, I suppose I should have just rounded it up to 10 because that's too many significant digits because I'm not sure how many shows we had. But it just seemed right to leave it at 9.5. Awkward, but mathematically accurate.
I don't know. Tony, I think you're out on a limb there.
Our sponsor for today's show, Shoes with Tread, reminding you, staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk, get those shoes. And if someone you love is a senior citizen, is getting toward the golden years of their life, make sure they do not walk around the house barefoot. That is a bad idea. I tell my patients, barefoot in the doctor's office and in the shower, and that's it. I have some form of house shoes, even slip-ons, that I wear. I never go barefoot because I have banged my toes on too many things through the years. I just said, this is ridiculous. I apparently can't protect my feet well enough. And that's back when I could still see them.
Uh-oh. Dum-dum-dum.
Yeah.
Isn't that one of our tips is to maintain
visual contact with your feet? But even when I was young, I would hit them. I remember I hit a...
Without the use of mirrors.
Right. Some weights out one time, some free weights, and I hit them with my toe. And that was a really particularly bad day in my life.
That seems like that would be very dumb.
In retrospect, maybe, but at the time it seemed like a good option.
Actually, I'm kind of more curious. I want to hear why you were around free weights. Were you visiting somebody's house?
No, they were in my living room.
You actually lift free weights?
Yeah.
Were they really free?
Well, they cost a nominal fee, but I left them there on the living room floor.
So your wife had probably been nagging you to clean those things up.
I forgot. You know, we had kids, and so you know how unpredictable the floor is when you got kids.
Yeah, because they leave free weights laying around.
No, because they leave toys, and you have to move things because they're going to play or they're going to do something else. And so they just got moved in a position they were not ordinarily in, and I come in, and I hit one of these weights with my toe. And I, you know, you don't
I'm
have that thing.
I'm still trying to get to the whole free weight thing. What do you do, curls? What are you, fascinated with your biceps? What's the deal?
You think that the only reason people lift weights is they're fascinated with their biceps?
Well, I think when you have a free weight laying in the living room, that tells me you were doing curls.
Yeah.
So people who do curls like their biceps.
Wow, boy, that's a just
do you
very
jump in front of the
statement.
Mirror and throw that arm up there and go, the beach is over that way? Is that what you do, Tony?
First of all, I can point out the beach without rippling anything, if you want to put it that way. I can, but I do. Again, strength training protects you against falls.
How long did you sell those free weights?
I've still got them.
Oh, okay.
They are now in the basement, and I don't have kids, and so I know where they are.
They're not someplace where you're going to trip over.
Right, and the other thing is I wear shoes now, so I'm not going to stub my toe on those weights anymore. So after this long interlude explaining why I might lift weights or whatever, the point is I do not ever go barefoot around the house. It's just simply, it's too dangerous.
I can't break myself of the habit.
Now, my kids, now keep in mind, my daughter's a marine ecologist. She spends all of her time on the beach, and they, at their house, they take the shoes off
the
door.
She wears slippers around the house.
She wears...
not slippers, but flippers.
Nah, they got those expensive sandals that all the young kids buy. But they pick them off at the door because they don't want to track sand in the house, even though they don't necessarily live on the beach. They still don't want to track sand. But for us, my wife and I, we will, if you come to our house, you can leave your shoes in the entrance hall if you want to, but we're going to walk right through. And so, you know, we wear shoes everywhere we go. I strongly recommend it. But what kind of shoes? Shoes with tread. Again, a heel box that you can't collapse with your hands. That is, if you pick up your shoes from the side, you should not be able to mash the heel box in. It should be stiff enough to support your heel. A low heel, a high heel more than 11 times increases your risk of falling. Socks double your risk. So you do not need high heels. You need low heels. You need a stiff heel box. You need a stiff sole. If you're having trouble with your balance, these cushioned walking shoes are great for us young folks, but as you get older, you need something a little bit stiffer than that. And then finally, tread on the bottom. And a beveled heel turns out to be a nice thing, lowers your risk of falling, according to the experts. That's what you need in your shoes. And with the number of people who fall every year, this is important to your independence. You cannot be too careful, in our opinion. Our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. Now, Rick, it's going to take me a while to get there. Okay, Rick, so now I'm going to explain how your smartphone might actually be able to lower your risk of falls, but you got to be patient with me. It's going to take us a while to get there.
Is that a smart joke?
Well, if it is, it's not a very good one. Cause
are you saying I'm not smart and it's going to take a while to explain it to me?
No, I'm going to say we need to talk about what smartphones
can
do.
My phone knows how to do it, but I don't.
Well, your phone doesn't know how to do it yet, but we can teach your phone. I'm not sure we can teach you because you're so annoying. That's the thing.
Hey,
ladies and gentlemen,
me.
I mean, right into
me.
Facebook. Just tell me how annoying you are, because you know, it's like how excited you are. How annoyed are you
as soon as you say
Rick just derails the show?
As soon as you say we're going to talk about smartphones, I say you're about to pick on me.
No, this is a good thing about smartphones.
Okay,
this is not about texting while driving, which we all know is a bad idea.
Nice.
little digs. That's
little poke.
How it works.
Little poke.
That's right. Kill the rose of Sharon and chastise.
I was not texting when that happened.
This came from the August 30th New Scientist, which is it's a summary of scientific research. And the original thing was reported in Nature Medicine. First of all, you need to know, and again, I'll tell you, it's going to take us a while to get there. Glaucoma, the second biggest cause of blindness after cataracts. Glaucoma is when pressure builds up in the eye. That pressure presses on the optic nerve in the back of the eye, and you start to lose your peripheral vision, and it can lead to blindness. Now, the way we measure it, Rick, if you ever had your eyes checked, you go to the eye doctor, and they will either puff air, or in some cases, they'll lay a tonometer called a Schiotz. I am not making that up. A Schiotz tonometer on your eye, and it measures the pressure in your eye.
Right.
It's tough.
The funny thing is when I was learning in the Army, Tony, one of the first things we did was you had to go around to all the what we called the MEPS, the Military Enlistment Processing Centers, and you had to calibrate all the medical equipment. It's where they did the physicals and all that, and they used to have those eye pressure meter. I mean, it's a really simple device. It just, you know, it's a little, basically a post that you stick in their eye and it pops up based on the pressure. But it was pretty scary.
It's like a tire gauge for your eye.
That's exactly what it is. It's a little tire gauge.
Right. And so, but you have to numb up the eye to do it.
It's reverse. Instead of it sticking out, it kind of pushes in.
And so you have to numb up the eye to do it. And obviously, there's a little technique to it. And so there's a big problem. The other thing is you can't monitor the pressure continuously. One thing we found with blood pressure is that continuous monitoring gives us a more accurate reading than intermittent things. And no one wants to go around with something stuck in their eye all day. What this group did, Nature Medicine, they were able to insert a sensor during cataract surgery. So you put in cataract surgery, you take out the old lens, which has gotten cloudy. You insert a new lens, and in that lens, you can put a sensor that will actually sense pressure and feed it to your smartphone. It can be embedded in a synthetic lens. The level can be read at any time using the smartphone camera that has a special optical adapter. Continuous monitoring is an unmet need in glaucoma, says the glaucoma researcher at the University College London, who invented this monitoring chip. So this is a pretty big deal. Putting in a monitoring chip. And you can see then how the smartphone can monitor different parameters related to your health. So that's the first thing you need to know. And we've gotten, there have been prizes awarded to the health apps for a smartphone. And people know now you can load an app that will measure how far you walk using the phone's GPS calculations. There is a thing now that will let you look in a person's ears using the smartphone. You can record your blood pressure, your pulse, and things like that. So smartphones now, they are more your personal computer than just a communication device. I think we're going to have to quit calling them phones.
Right.
Because phone is only a minor thing that they do.
It's a communicator.
Yeah.
You ever see Star Trek, by the way?
Yeah. I never was a big Star Trek fan, but
you know what a communicator is.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the communicator, and it's what
it does. The thing is, just imagine the flip phones. We went through that flip it up and talk thing.
Mm-hmm.
See, now we're figuring out you don't have to necessarily flip it to talk.
No.
But if you remember Star Trek, their communicators were a little flip-up.
But they didn't do anything else, which is really odd.
Well, true.
You would think they would have like a phaser communicator, tricorder, all that stuff all in one.
What do you really need when you can say, beam me up, and all of a sudden you're in a different place?
Beam me
to Tahiti.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
But they are in a sense a communicator, but they're also a monitor and a calculator kind of put together. And they can monitor various health parameters. And one of the things they can do with these peripherals is either look in your ears, or in the case of this one, which was just mentioned in New Scientist, they can look at your intraocular pressure. And you start to realize, I mean, first of all, no one would have surgery to have this thing stuck in their eye. But if you're going to put a lens in anyway, why not put a smart lens in? Next question, well, you could put a heart valve in that measures blood flow. You could put a hip.
Well, then why wouldn't I put a smart heart valve in?
Right. Put a that communicates with your smartphone. What if your pacemaker communicated with your smartphone?
Well, then I'd want a smart pacemaker.
What's the difference between a pacemaker that communicates with your smartphone and a smart pacemaker?
Well, I'm just saying, we've gotten to a place where everything is smart. We have...
especially co-hosts.
Hey, you don't actually ask for a smart co-host.
Well, I see you're wearing your smarty pants there.
I'm just saying, haven't you noticed how everything is smart devices?
Yeah.
TVs are smart. DVDs are smart. People are dumb.
So okay.
I mean, if you think about it. The whole, I don't know, it's not necessarily politically correctness, but it's a marketing strategy. We somehow or another put a value on the word smart. And so they're attaching smart to things that it plays movies. It's TV. It's not smart. Anyway, dinged a nerve there.
Okay, so a smart car, for instance.
Exactly.
That annoys you.
What's smart about the car?
Okay.
The person who buys it is the smart one. But anyway, that's what we do as a marketing tactic to make you think you're smart.
Well, I feel bad now because I use the term smartphone and I should use the term...
Phone. Device.
Well, device. Because it's not a phone. I won't let...
Here's the thing.
You don't like smart. I don't like phone because I don't think it's a phone.
Well, but funny thing is the mobile strategy that most places are going to is a BYOD strategy. It's a bring your own device. It's not a phone. It's not a tablet. It's a device. So,
right. So yeah. If you... what Rick's saying is if you are in a hospital, if you're in a university, if you're at work, you bring whatever you bring.
Right.
And they will enable it to, in a secure way, function within the work environment. And then you take it home and all that stuff gets cordoned off so that you can't walk out with company secrets. All right. So whatever these devices are, this device can measure your intraocular pressure through a chip that gets implanted when you have cataract surgery. Well, here's another one also from the same issue, which started making me think about this. This was one... by measuring the way someone is typing, the speed, the rhythm, and how often they use the backspace, and then combining that information with an analysis of the typed text, a computer program can predict predict how they are feeling with 80% accuracy. The big thing are the sudden emotions, things like anger, excitement, joy. They're going 80% to joy, actually 87% of the time, looking at the text and also the way you're typing. Now, they point out this could really come in handy. Let's say Rick is sending out flaming emails. His device, we won't call it a smartphone, but his device could send me a signal saying, hey, you might want to open this email from Rick because he seems pretty upset right now.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Because you made fun of smart co-hosts. I'm sorry. You mentioned that there wasn't smart co-hosts.
I don't think I ever didn't call you smart. As a matter of fact, I think I pointed out that you are using smart wearables. You're wearing your smarty pants there today. And so in that sense, I think I was just pointing out that
you're just can't win those with devices. You, so I'm just going to shut up.
Well, the point is, though,
you finish the show.
You can imagine. First of all, you can imagine life without a co-host. But if you you know, beyond that, you can imagine then a phone that will actually tip people off. And if you're angry or something like that, the phone can send that signal. The question is, at some point, do you want your device to know that much about you?
Right. I mean, Tony, honestly, I mean, the whole devices thing, the level of, and if you want to call it smartness, you want to call it enablement, whatever you want to call it, that the apps and the technology that's built into these devices is incredible. I mean, just near field communications, being able to walk up and tap stuff and it be able to communicate. And for instance, you're going to see a day in the next, I'd say probably less than 2 years, where you can literally walk up to a soda fountain, you know, a Coke machine, and tap your smartphone on it and put your phone back in your pocket and it'll deliver the Coke to you. I mean, that's something that's prototyped. It's, I mean, some places may already be available, but near field communications coupled with, you know, accelerometers and all the various things are on these devices, coupled with the human ingenuity in the apps, it's so amazing what they're going to be able to do.
All right, in the final moments of our show, here's the payoff. This was from the British Science Festival in Birmingham, United Kingdom. Aston University mathematician Dr. Max Little. He is looking at these smartphones, at these peripheral devices. He says, if you use their voice recordings to look for a soft, breathy speech and a tremor in the voice, and if you use their accelerometers, and they what they can do is they can watch and see how long it takes you to walk forward 20 paces, they said around 98% of the time, they can accurately detect whether or not you have Parkinson's disease, which is a risk factor for falling. So the idea of using the things that are already in the phone to diagnose this, it could, first of all, you could get an earlier diagnosis, so you wouldn't be wondering if you have Parkinson's. Your phone could just say, hey, I think you've got Parkinson's, you should see a doc. And secondly, if you do have Parkinson's, they could track your response to medications, watching how fast the smartphone moves when you walk, and also watching the quality of your voice as recorded by the smartphone. So this is all good. One of the things they talk about that you've got to think, especially with what we've been talking about, is the ethics of this. You could actually, the smartphone could go further. It could see how much time you're spending in the bathroom. Maybe you've got a kidney infection. It could see whether or not you got Parkinson's. It could see whether or not you keep going back in the same room over and over again as if you had Alzheimer's. You could track a lot of things using a smartphone. Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't I like to know what my mom is doing now? She says she's so busy. Wouldn't it be nice to know if she's just sitting on the couch or if she actually is around doing stuff?
What about if you engage that accelerometer and you actually tell she fell?
Yeah. Well, and you could do that. You could track motion. You could monitor a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
With the current technology that you have in your
smart
device.
Smart technology.
Can you smartly get us off the air?
I think you want that bad, don't you? Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember this important safety information.
Health Matters may cause you to fall asleep without warning during daily activities, including talking, eating, and driving, which may result in accidents. Tell your doctor if you feel new or increased sleepiness while listening to Health Matters.
When listening to Health Matters, hallucinations may occur, and you may sometimes feel dizzy, nauseated, faint, or sweaty when you sit up or stand quickly.
Before listening to Health Matters, talk to your doctor if you feel sleepy during the day. Whew, better make that call now. Tell your doctor if you drink alcohol or take other medications that may make you drowsy, as these can increase the chance that Health Matters will make you fall asleep when you should be awake.
Some patients listening to Health Matters have reported problems such as gambling, compulsive eating, compulsive buying, and increased sex drive. If you or your family members notice that you are developing unusual urges or behaviors, talk to your doctor.
These are not all the possible side effects of Health Matters. Tell your doctor if you have any side effect that bothers you. I mean, that means any side effect that bothers you. Experts have pointed out that 20% of people listening to Health Matters should not be listening to the radio and should actually be under the care of a physician. Boy, I can get in line with that.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for the first part of our serial Ebola series on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.